Hi, everybody. I'm hoping you can hear me. I seem to have had a minor technical difficulty, but I'm hoping that I'm connected here. I want to thank, obviously, Vi and William and William for all of those wonderful presentations. And it's absolutely great for me to hear how our work is really moving forward in this sphere. So we're going to be opening up the Q&A. So what I think we're going to do this in two ways, and we've got a good amount of time for Q&A. So thanks for our presenters for being brief and concise and really having some focused presentations. We're going to open up the Q&A. Now, as we've done in the past, you guys will have the chance to type your questions into the chat room. And we will do our utmost to keep up with you because sometimes you guys go very fast. So we'll do our very, very best to keep up with you. And William and Joy and our other presenters will also have the chance to answer questions right in that chat. So sometimes I will hand the microphone over to one of our presenters to answer a specific question, and sometimes we will be able to answer your question right there in that chat. So you'll just have to multitask and look at both pieces. So during our presentations, we had a couple questions come in, so I'd like to address those first. Now, we had Richard Tinsley gave us two questions, and at the very beginning, when William was presenting on MERS and talking a little bit about the work that went into it and how it was created, he mentioned that there was an example about financial services sometimes needing to adapt to context. And context has obviously come up many times here in our conversations. And we know that context matters. We even have working groups named Context Matters. So the answer to Richard's question is he mentioned that obviously sometimes local laws, if they prevent them, whether they are religious-based local laws, whether they're actual laws written into the Constitution around banking regulations, can prevent sometimes financial services from being available to different populations in different formats. He mentioned that local systems pop up to take their place. That is absolutely the case. And as you all know in your work, that does happen. So what I'd like to just point out is that part of what the, for instance, assessment and analysis standards do, and part of what the financial services standards do, is they make sure that we explore all of those pieces of the puzzle, because usually there's a much broader scope of information we have to look at when we're doing this work than we have sometimes looked at in the past. So the standards hope to allow us to do that. There was also a question that Emmanuel brought up when talking about that assessment analysis standards, as we were hearing from William, whether or not the EMMA or the pre-EMMA, the PCMA, was used. Now, I don't know if many of you know, the EMMA is a tool. It's the Emergency Market Mapping and Analysis tool. That has been developed over a number of years with, again, a group of partners, primarily led by IRC and Oxfam and many other key players. And the PCMA is the pre-crisis marketing analysis. So I think I'd like to put to our presenters, because two people have sort of brought up this issue. Can you guys just answer, and William, perhaps you can take the mic for a minute, and then we can pass it to Vi. How in your work you've used the other tools out there? We know there's a proliferation of other tools and strategies to use in our work. What are some other key tools you used to make sure you were meeting those standards and really doing that work to the best of your ability? So I'd like to pass the mic over to William if you're there and see if you can give us an answer to that question. If Emma was a part of your toolkit or if others were a part of your toolkit as you were making sure standards were being met.
Yes. So how did we use other tools? So that's William Martin from CRS speaking. We use these tools as we are very local context oriented, so we are adapting our tool to the local context but also to the other stakeholders we have around. So basically, usually the methodology, for Nepal, the methodology we used was based on rapid market assessment and also some EMMA methodology part of it. And we combined that, with what other actors were doing in order to gather the same information. So I cannot say that we sticked with one tool to analyze the context, but we analyzed, we did a response analysis tool, you know, and we identified the gaps we had to cover to help us to analyze which response would be more appropriate. And then based on that, we picked into the existing tools such as EMA and the Rapid Market Assessment to...
Thanks, William. So hopefully everybody can still hear me okay. We have used the EMA several times, and even in the South Sudan example I gave you, we have used the EMA to understand what the pre-crisis markets looked like and what they look like now before we start the intervention. In cases of emergencies, we haven't been able to, and I'm talking about entirely my experience as a practitioner, I have not chosen to do something as detailed as an EMA. I would have gone into something which is more of a rapid market assessment. And here's something that I found really interesting. When I went into Nepal for the crisis, for the emergency response, we went out and talked to some traders. We did a very rapid market assessment, and I know that other actors in the room were doing the I forgot what it's called, the market assessments that we were, you know, that everybody was doing, and we were contributing to those. But what I found that really helped me with coming up with a really quick response for cash transfers was doing a sort of user experience. So we talked to people around those locations in those markets, and I'll explain this in a little bit. We asked them where they access their goods. We asked them how they access their cash. We asked them how often they do it. And we found that basically people who are living in some of these remote locations would come down to the markets at least once a month to access their goods, and then they would go back up again. In these locations, because there were no other financial service providers, and even the ones that were the agents that were present had been completely destroyed, and I'm talking about Sindhpal Chuk, we provided cash through traders. So basically, instead of doing a voucher program, what we basically said is people are coming down to these markets to access cash. Let's provide the cash to the trader, to his bank account in a more stable location, and traders who have this cash anyway can disperse the cash to people. And what it did was basically it helped the traders to build of these social networks with people, but more importantly, it also gave them a commission, the same commission that we would have given to a financial service provider like an agent was not present, was given to the trader. So it helped them to get some money out of this cash transfer program that was directly targeting people who were affected by the earthquake. And as people were coming down to these markets to get the cash from the traders, they were also buying goods from them. So for me, sometimes the existing tools that are out there are useful, they're sort of guidelines, but more often than not in a post-emergency situation, we don't always have the time to do the entire thing, so we have to take certain shortcuts. And for me, this user experience kind of angle really worked well, and I feel like it continues to work well for me.
Great. I'm not sure if I have the mic back.
You
so
do.
So let's
yes.
see if I can get the mic. Okay, great. Okay. Thank you so much, Vi, and thank you, William, for answering those questions. We've had a few other questions pop up here in the chat, which I think you guys can also see. But I think there's been a couple discussions. Richard also talked a little bit about his experience with the private sector markets in the Middle East moving forward very quickly in the middle of a crisis. Both of our presenters had talked about how quickly markets resurge and fill the void. And we've also had a couple folks in our chat here mention Emmanuel as well, asking about the private sector and how engagement with the private sector, not just the financial services side of the private sector, but how the standards talk about engaging with private sector actors. And then finally, Hamsha, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Hamsha also mentioned that having, working with the most vulnerable in communities, and again, I think all of this kind of relates to where we engage along this continuum, right? Working with the most vulnerable in communities can often have a strong effect on food security issues, and as we know, people's livelihoods affect many aspects of their lives, right? They affect everything from their health to their well-being to we've had studies where it affects how they interact with their children and stress levels in the household, as well as food security. So we know that this is really important. So I'd like to hear maybe from our presenters briefly about how working with the standards, perhaps whether it's the assessment and analysis standards, whether it was the financial services standards, or perhaps even in the enterprise development standards, which may address that as well, how looking and using those standards helped you determine both where in that continuum you wanted to engage, whether it was at highly vulnerable levels, whether it was in that mid-level VI, you talked a little bit about that, engaging with people just above the most vulnerable level who had experience and had worked with financial systems and before, and then were able to absorb the cash and move forward with their businesses more effectively in Sudan. And then maybe talk also, William, a little bit about how those, how the working with the private sector helped you move more quickly in the recovery phases. So I think if we can start with VI this time, answering some of those questions in the standards, and then move on to William.
Sarah, I feel like those were a lot of questions.
Okay.
All combined into and one.
It was a lot of questions combined into one. Let me break it down. If maybe you can just talk a little bit about if in your work you use the standards to help you understand how to work with the private sector, and if you did not, where do you feel those gaps were?
Well, this is a pretty loaded question considering the audience the audience on the other side.
That's okay. We want an improvement. We're working towards revision.
Thank you. That makes me feel a lot better. And again, I'm speaking from a personal perspective. This is not an agency-wide perspective. And in looking at the MERS standards, the way I look at it is sort of what are things to look for? These are sort of guidelines, framework. But there are times when I want to know how do I do this, and that's the time when I will probably go to a specific tool. And you are very clear in the MERS about what the MERS is and how it can be used. Whether I have used MERS in engaging with the private sector, the answer is no. And if you ask me for what gaps there are, well, I can't really answer that because I haven't used it. it's a little bit of a conundrum you put me in, so.
Not a problem. Perhaps we can hand over to William. William, did you have any experience in engaging with private sector partners, and did looking through the MERS guidelines in any of the sections assist you in that process?
So yes, we work with like small private stakeholders and bigger ones. And what I would say, I will not answer directly to this question, but what I would say is by experience and from field experience, it seems a good idea and it seems improving our response when the market's response is adapted. However, I think more research is needed on the trickle-down and multiplier effects of working with the private sector, because it sounds a good idea, but I think more evidence on the trickle-down and multiplier effect is needed and might be a necessary step before the revision of the MERS.
Great, thank you very much. I think I've just realized that I can speak and you can speak at the same time, which is a real revelation. So,
Sarah is having a moment of technical difficulty, but I just wanted to add a quick word too on the issue of private sector engagement. From OFDA's perspective, one of the things that we point out to our partners is that the MERS does, in its coordination standard, require that you coordinate with the private sector, and I think that's something that's often missing in terms of humanitarian coordination, that it's, everybody knows that it's critical to coordinate with other humanitarian agencies and within the cluster system and all of that. But having something out there that is a standard that says, yes, you are also supposed to coordinate with the private sector, I think is a nice, strong message. As always, though, I think the devil's in the details, and it's the how of doing that that does get challenging. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Laura. And yes, I am here, which I hope you can hear me. So yeah, there is a standard. I mean, just to sort of plug it a little bit, there is a standard. It's core standard number 2. It's an important core standard in this work, which basically is about coordination and effectiveness. So that is absolutely there and an important part of it. And it says in partnership with private sector actors for greater leverage and impact. So that's very well recognized, I think. But I think William does also have a point that there is still some work and some thinking to be done around what forms of partnerships and what kinds of partnerships can we really have greater levels of impact. So I think that's an important point for us to think through and spend some more time on. I'd like to ask a little bit of a different question and go in a slightly different direction. Both of these presentations talked about technology, and they talked about financial services and technology. And I guess I'd like to hear from our presenters a little bit more about, as we go into this revision process, for me, this new technological environment has made a huge difference. You know, when I started doing humanitarian work, we didn't have email. So that's how far back that goes. And email was not, we were out in the field, and we had a sat phone if we were in good shape. And mostly we had a CODAN, and that was pretty much it. So, and now we're able to do e-cash transfers, and I'm able to monitor in real time what my cash transfer programs are doing in Turkey from my laptop in New York. And, you know, that's a pretty big change. And so I'd like to hear a little bit from our presenters, maybe, how their experiences with technology has impacted how they're working in the economic recovery sector. William, would you like to just address that a little bit? I think it would be interesting to hear a piece if you can do that and then hand over to Vi.
Yes, Sarah. So two things. First, it changed, I think I'm talking in a financial service perspective. And it seems to be the ground of the humanitarian work. You have new actors coming in, and they are not necessarily service provider only. They are humanitarian actors. You know, when we're talking about stakeholders such as Visa, MasterCard, they are not still quite like humanitarian actors like us, but they are not only providing services anymore. So that changed, you know, the game a lot. So that's on one end. On the other end, a lot of questions come with it. We have a lot of questions about the risks associated to it, you know, the data protection and all those things. And sometimes too much, there's not too much question, but I think we should have enough information to assess the right level of risk associated to the use of new technologies, and to assess at the right level these risks, to not, you know, to make sure that, well, it's important for us that we address them, and when it's not, that we are not over considering them.
Great. Thank you very much, William. Yeah, I think that it is also important for us, just because something is shiny and new and seems like it's going to be a magic bullet, everything does come with risks. And engaging with different actors, they also have their own agendas and their own priorities. And we all know that there are protection issues around many things, everything from information sharing to, you know, having quick access to financial services can also be protection issues that we need to address. So, Vi, do you have anything you want to add on this?
Yeah, I do want just a couple of things to add on, and I completely agree on the data protection and being careful about sharing sensitive information. My experience with technology, you know, the experience in the Philippines, I pointed out earlier that it was fantastic in terms of being able to provide, you know, provide us with outreach to 25,000 people to be able to continue using that technology to encourage savings, use SMS messages, interactive voice recordings. And just being able to link vulnerable or disaster-affected populations to financial services. Now, as humanitarian community, as donors start to think more about financial inclusion and what is that next step, these steps become extremely crucial. And MercyCorps as an agency invests considerable resources into expanding, you know, so financial inclusion for people who currently don't have access. That being said, I do want to say that there are two things on that. One is, as we are finding more and more, the right kind of financial service products do matter. And I'm not ruling out informal financial services. I'm absolutely keeping them on the table. But when we talk about formal financial services, and when we talk about data protection, so here's where the rub is, right? So we need to be able to work with financial service providers because we have a unique understanding of that population, we have a unique understanding of their needs. We need to be able to translate that properly to financial service providers for them to be able to come up with the right product. So while data protection is important and not sharing all of your beneficiary information is important, we also need to be able to trust that the private sector will be able to work with us in ways to sort of look at aggregated beneficiary information to be able to create those, tailor those right kind of products. And if we don't want to trust them with that, if we don't trust them with that much of information, how are we talking about engagement with private sector? So for me, this is a bit of a catch-22. We need to be able to work better with private sector, especially when it comes to technology, to be able to create those right products for people.
Thank you so much, Vi. Yeah, I think it's really going to be something interesting, and I don't think that's a new discussion that we have to have. I mean, I think these are some very similar discussions we've had about all different kinds of economic programming and different kinds of access points for those economic programming that we've had for many years. And I think we have to apply the same rigor and the same discussion to these new technological points and these new technological access points, really, that we have to the populations that they have access to now, too. There was two more questions that I want to get to quickly. We're running out of time, and I want to make sure we have just a few seconds at the end to give everyone on the line a chance to engage with us. But very briefly, one of our presenters, and it's been mentioned a few times, this idea of us being in a context, us being in a continuum and understanding where does resilience come through and how do you work on resilience in the beginning so that you have recovery faster? Is, you know, planning for resilience a part of the recovery process? And I think that as practitioners, we're really starting to understand that these are cycles. And these are cycles that that communities go through and that households go through and that lives go through. And it's not really a very linear continuum where if you do your resilience now and then you do your humanitarian intervention and then you do your recovery, then it's all going to work out. We know that people are at many stages at many times and can be at multiple stages at many times. So I think that letting go of this idea of a linear progression will be something that we have to work hard on going forward. Now, we have to speak in terms, and that's the way we work. So I think that in our revision process, we're going to be spending some time on language and figuring out the right way to express the fact that it's not a linear process. I think will help with this discussion for both donors and practitioners and the communities we work on and work with. And finally, I wanted to just bring up a point that Diana talked about here, is working with the private sector and doing a lot of the work that we do, we can sometimes feel as though we may be working with actors that make us a little nervous. And let's all be very honest. Sometimes we're working with people in the private sector that we sort of are going, oh boy, I really hope this isn't going to jump up and bite me or someone else later. And I think, I mean, the standards, the do no harm standard is core standard number 4, is one that we have to take very seriously. And we really have to do our due diligence. And we have to take context very seriously and understand our context as best we can. So yes, there are sometimes actors that in the private sector that we won't be comfortable working with. And I think that that's rational and I think that's okay. But I don't think it means that we have to cross off the private sector as an entire entity. I think it means that we have to be conscious and conscientious. And then she also mentions That the private sector sometimes is difficult. It's difficult to have them engage because we work in very volatile areas and there's a lot of risk involved. And I think all of us know that as well. And one of the things some of our programs do is help mitigate that risk, either by knowing the context well and knowing our beneficiaries well, or sometimes a whole program can be designed to help the private sector mitigate their risk and make them feel more comfortable and confident engaging. I want to thank all of our presenters. We're here at time. I also want to ask all of you on this in this seminar have the experience and the knowledge and the wisdom to help us through this revision process. So William Wallace, as you heard from him, is the director and working on this revision process with me through the SEEP network. And we will be doing some virtual consultations with our practitioner networks. And I'm very, very hopeful that you can all be active in those virtual consultations to help revise these standards, to really make them a tool for our current practice and a tool for our current operating environment that you can use and use well, because I think for both ourselves and for the beneficiaries we work with, this is going to make a huge difference going forward. These contexts and these crises are not getting any simpler. And so I think we really need to make sure that our standards are as good as we can get them so they can be real tools for us moving forward. So I'd like to thank all of our presenters. Dina, thanks for staying with us, and William from CRS. Bye from Mercy Corps, thanks for calling in. I know you guys called in from far afield. I'd like to thank all of you internationally who came and stayed with us this whole time. That was fantastic. And we've got our friends in Washington. If there's any wrapping up, Joy is going to wrap us up, I think, a few minutes just to do some last housekeeping things. And I'd like to thank all of you. And if you can, go on to the Standards website. William, if you can type it in the chat room right there, go right onto the Standards website and sign up for updates. And William's email is there. And if you want to be a part of this revision process, get in touch with him. We really encourage you to do that. So thanks very much, and I hope the rest of you, wherever you are on the globe, enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. This is William Wallace from the SEEP Network. I wanted to thank you all also for joining us. This is an exciting time as we start this revision, and this webinar already gave us some hints in terms of where practitioners are going to be needing more help in terms of revising the handbook. I think private sector engagement, also the whole advances in terms of ICT with financial services, those are two areas that we really need to put our radar on as we continue and move forward in this revision process. So I just wanted to thank you all. My email was on the presentation, and also look at the MERS in Action website if you can download the handbook. We really are looking forward to getting as much feedback as we can. As I mentioned earlier, the first and second editions had a lot of different organizations involved. I'd invite you to look at the last pages of the handbook. It kind of gives you an idea, which is very representative of our sector. But we want to get more people involved. The better this standards will reflect the real needs of the field practitioner, and that's what we're really trying to do. So thank you very much. And Laura has just put in the website for the standards where you can download it. Thanks a lot.
And I want to reiterate a great thank you to all our presenters and to everyone who made this webinar possible, and also to you for your great questions and insights. Take a moment to push some buttons again. We're really interested in hearing about your feedback and how you found this webinar and what ways that we can improve it. Most importantly, you know, what important lessons did you learn from today's discussions? We're really interested in what you're taking away from this, and then hopefully to, you know, follow up and improve your practice as you move forward. Again, thank you to everyone for participating, and I hope that you can be in touch soon, and we'll certainly be in touch. All right, thank you so much, and I'll leave the room open a little bit so you all can complete the polls.